Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:10 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is February 22nd. So, Brent crude is down $2.55, coming back into the 80 handle, and we can very clearly see that there's been a sequence of lower rally highs since the beginning of 2022. Very short term, there is a sequence of higher reaction lows since the low back in the beginning of December. So this is do or die moment here for oil. And it's going to say a lot about the health of the global economy. So obviously we have supply being constrained because OPEC is not producing as much, and Russia is not producing as much. And then we have the countervailing argument that, well, maybe the global economy is not doing so great either. So we've had a very balanced market now for the last 6 weeks. But these types of very inert periods of trading do not last indefinitely. So a breakout is on the way, and it's either going to be on the upside, which would be very clearly inflationary, or it's going to be on the downside. And if it is on the downside, then that's going to contribute to deflationary forces. So we also had the Fed minutes in here today, and they are all talking about raising interest rates. So the question, of course, is how much further can they raise interest rates before they really start to experience trouble? And I think that's by far the most important consideration. Because even though they are talking a good game of raising rates, if oil breaks on the downside, then we're going to start to see deflation start to come through because it will start to take some of the price pressure out of absolutely everything that depends on oil. So that's certainly true. We've already seen a very significant decline in natural gas, and it bounced in here today, came all the way down to test the $2 area, but it was not quite able to hold all of the intraday movement, so it was up 9 cents. It really does need to see upside follow through tomorrow, and most particularly, if it can push back above the 250 area, then that would break the sequence of lower rally highs, and it would signal a low of more than short-term significance. I think it's most particularly important to highlight the longer-term trend here, that the number of times that natural gas has traded below $2 and stayed there for any period of time is frighteningly small. In fact, it has historically been a very attractive buying opportunity to buy anywhere between about $2.20 and $1.50, because then subsequently prices have doubled or tripled. So we're certainly in an interesting environment right now in the energy sector. In the USA, the Freeport LNG terminal has been cleared to open again, and they've been trying to repair that now for most of the last 7 or 8 months, following an explosion very close or very soon after Russia invaded Ukraine. The fact that it alone represents about 20% of all the export capacity means that there was more gas around in North America, and that was one of the contributing factors in terms of this big decline that we've had. Now that European prices have come all the way back down to be competitive with coal, well, then that is clearly suggestive that for a globally significant energy resource, it's inevitable that demand will start to come back in when prices fall sufficiently that it becomes competitive with any form of competition. And when natural gas is trading below the price of coal on a BTU per unit basis, that's obviously going to favor demand for natural gas. And the price was up over 1% in here today, although because the volatility has been so extraordinary, you can't see it on this chart, but we are definitely starting to see at least some demand beginning to come back in. Now, I think what we're also starting to see here is the tables turning somewhat on the large companies. So Apple is being sued for infringing on an EKG patent, and the threat is they won't be allowed to import Apple watches into the USA. And I thought it was especially interesting that on the same day that that news broke, Apple came out with a super secret project that they've been working on, talking about how they're going to use the Apple Watch as a mechanism for measuring glucose in a non-invasive way. And diabetes is a huge global market, and it's really something that ticks the boxes for pharmaceutical companies in a way that most other diseases don't. The two things are that you've got a growing number of patients because of rising living standards and the prevalence of sugar in the diets of just about everyone now, and then obesity is on the rise. But then on top of that, once someone has diabetes, they need progressively more of the drug to sustain themselves. So you get growth on two fronts. Well, obviously, if Apple can come up with a product, but of course, they're not coming out with a product, they're simply saying that they're doing the research on it, because it could be quite a few years before they actually get it into an Apple Watch. They need to perfect it and reduce the size of it in order to get it onto something that can fit in your wrist. But at least that's good news. Here we are, right in the region of the 200-day moving average. We've had a good size rebound over the course of the last 6 weeks. Now it's testing the sequence of lower rally highs, and at least testing support in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this has been a significant loss of uptrend consistency, and it has come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And that, for Apple, is normal. It's quite we've had quite a few instances where Apple has accelerated relative to the 1,000-day moving average, then come back to test it in a ranging consolidation manner. And that's basically what we've had since the beginning of 2022. But we're also in the cyclically low period for iPhone sales, because most people only replace their phone after about 1,000 charges when the battery starts to degrade. So, since they sold so many phones in 2021 and 22, then the chances of a lot of demand coming through this year are probably quite unlikely. So, certainly the levels that we're at right now need to hold if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to ranging consolidation. Now then, we're also starting to see some weather events affecting the commodity markets. There are significant floods in São Paulo, so coffee is popping on the upside here and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, we've had some absolutely extraordinary volatility in coffee, and coffee is the second biggest futures contract after oil. So it dropped precipitously and has since rebounded very emphatically. But perhaps more important than that is that breakout in 2022 wasn't fully retraced, and the price might have dipped back down below the 1,000-day, but at least it's bouncing from the upper side of the base formation. And I think that we should be prepared for additional upside here. We've had floods, droughts, and now heavy rain in São Paulo. And that this is very different weather than we've had for several years. So it's just a succession of bad weather events are impacting the coffee price. Then there's a cyclone in Madagascar, and Madagascar produces about 90% of all the vanilla in the world. So this is the second cyclone that's hit the island in the space of 2 years. So it's quite likely to damage the vanilla, or I guess the crop there. And that's likely to put upward pressure on vanilla. Now, that's not something you can trade. But the reality is that it is likely to feed into commodity price inflation and ingredient inflation for ice cream and sweets manufacturers. So Nestlé now is hovering here in the region of the upper side of that range that formed between 2019 and 2020. So it really is do or die here. And I find it very interesting that there's a significant number of shares that are trading right between their 1,000 and 200-day moving averages. And we can look back at 2018. We had a very similar condition. And then when it broke out, it did so in an emphatic fashion. Of course, it could just as easily break on the downside, and a lot will have to do with how the global economy performs. Now, one thing that has also sort of been at the back of my mind is that when you see interest rates going up this aggressively, when you see the size of the central bank balance sheets coming down so aggressively, and the nominal rate of interest higher than it has been in years, and inverted yield curves left and right, and money supply growth negative, then something's going to break. And the chances are that it's going to be Credit Suisse. I wasn't quite willing to reach that conclusion. Somebody asked me what I thought the chances of Credit Suisse going bust are, and I wasn't willing to really give a confident answer a month ago. But the news is not getting better. They keep needing to raise new money, and the kinds of bets that they've made keep going bad. So we are still in a downtrend, and there's some big questions that are going to be asked here. Now, when we think about the yield curve spread, the time when we get the most selling pressure in the stock market is when the yield curve goes from inverted to positive. So the 10-year minus 3 month is negative right now of about 88 basis points. And it did pop on the upside over the course of the last 2 weeks, but not in a sufficiently dynamic manner to break the downtrend or really suggest that there is panic brewing. There's this clear possibility that the Fed and other central banks will continue to raise rates until something breaks. So Credit Suisse could be that something that breaks. There's rising numbers of defaults all over Europe, and then we have all of these institutional private equity funds that have been limiting withdrawals. So there is potentially also a mark-to-market event starting to brew out there on the horizon. So, obviously, then it's important to monitor where we start to see clear evidence of underperformance. So, then let's just contrast how do some of these banking indices look. So, the S&P 500 banks popped on the upside at the beginning of the year, but now it's coming back to test the region of both moving averages. And the next question is, if it follows through on the downside, that's going to be clearly a failed upside break, and that implies that the next level of support will be somewhere around 300. Now, let's also look at the regional banks index as more of an indication of what's happening out there in the real economy. And prices really haven't been going anywhere, but they are starting to pull back from the upper side of the range. Now, let's just look at UK banks. There's an active bid underway for Standard Chartered, and that has also ignited interest in HSBC, although I think that's very unlikely to be taken over. But the FTSE 350 banks index has popped on the upside. Now, we are a little overbought in the short term. We could easily get some consolidation, but this is clear relative strength. And then the European banks have been rallying on the back of what is effectively an energy dividend because they had set aside so much money to allow for mass bankruptcies. So the number of bankruptcies in Europe has certainly gone up, but not to nearly the extent that banks were putting money away to allow for it. So that money has now come back on the balance sheet and it contributed to significant outperformance, but we are now in an area of resistance. So having had a good sized rally, I think it is quite likely we're going to get at least some pause and consolidation here, and that could potentially take us down or back down to the 100 level. And then let's think about Japanese banks, because there's a lot of conversation going on right now about when are they going to raise interest rates, or if they're going to raise interest rates, what are they going to do about their quantitative easing program in the face of clear inflationary pressures? So the TOPIX Banks Index popped on the upside at the end of last year. And yes, it was in negative territory in here today, but very clear outperformance. So rising interest rates are generally positive for banks, but most particularly positive for banks when they have been going down for so long. US banks have not been going down all that long. Now the dollar index continues to strengthen here, and it's right in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we're approaching an area of resistance here. So then this is really all about how much interest rates are going to go up and how long are they going to stay there. I think that the chances are we're going to see the peak of the interest rate cycle sometime this year. And then central banks are talking about leaving rates high for a prolonged period, and I think that that's unlikely. I think by the time we get up to 5.25, 5.5%, we're already going to start to see problems in the wider economy. But we haven't seen them yet. So then stock markets are still reasonably steady. So the Nasdaq 100 was in mildly positive territory in here today and continuing to steady from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it definitely needs to hold this breakout. So we're really in a very clear decision-making period here for markets. Nonetheless, I think that any potential for a rally is likely to be short-lived until we see the lagged effect of very rapid interest rate hikes catch up with markets. And then subsequently, we'll see yields starting to come down and a deflationary problem arise. I simply cannot ignore the fact that the balance sheet runoff that we're seeing from the Federal Reserve has coincided with deflationary fears on at least two occasions in the past, once for the ECB and once for the Fed. And the speed with which the balance sheet is contracting now is at least as fast and probably faster than what we saw between 2018 and 19. And considering that it's only been going on for about 6 to 9 months, the reality is that probably hasn't yet caught up with what's happening in the broader economy. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.